Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte, episode 51, recorded on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. Michael Greco.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, helping you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. It's time for TWiT Photo. I love this show. A show in which we talk about photography as an art form, as a creative form, as something that you can do and enjoy. But we do it with some of the best practitioners in the business, and we've got some great ones today. But before we get to our guests, let's get to our host, the great Catherine Hall, CatherineHall.net.
I feel like Catherine. I need to do what you just did.
What's that?
I love TWiT Photo. I love the show.
It is a great show, and thanks to you, because you bring in great people. We've got two guests today.
Yes, we do.
But let's start with you and your tip of the week this week.
Yes, I do. I have a tip.
So if you go to CatherineHall.net and click the blog link, every week she does a nice tip here.
Choosing authenticity over perfection.
What do you mean by that?
Well, this is something I've actually struggled with a lot, being a middle child.
You want to make it perfect.
I'm a perfectionist. And I think perfectionism has a place. I'm not saying it's bad to want to create things perfect. However, not when it compromises authenticity.
Right.
And because you're taking out the real heart, the real root, the real... what makes things unique and special. And this is something, as an artist, I had to sort of struggle with.
And you give, as an example, a very wonderful photo that's very well known.
Yes, it is. And well, yeah. And Bob Dylan. Like, think about Bob Dylan. Is he, his voice, let's be honest.
Not perfect.
Scratchy, not good.
Not perfect.
However, he changed the world with his music.
Right. There's a good example.
It's not about his voice. It's about his words, his message, his lyrics. And then if we scroll down more, you look at, like, Charlize Theron or Al Pacino.
Wait a minute. Now, Charlize does not actually look like on the left. That was in the movie Monster. I just want to say.
But the point of the story is that
she's wearing more makeup on the left.
She wasn't afraid.
No. I love Charlize for that reason. Yeah. She is always willing to look bad.
Yeah.
And that all blows me away when somebody's that beautiful is willing to look bad. It's great.
It's great. And then.
Look at me, Mr. Imperfection.
Is he.
Thank you for including me in your post.
Are you a polished news anchor?
No. No.
Are you,
can you see Dan Rather doing
love
that?
You so much.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I do not act like a groomed person.
And then finally, we have Michael Greco and Steve Martin. But I wanted to bring up our guest today because he does a great example. You look at this image and it's polished and it's beautiful.
You can't say this is imperfect. Yeah.
However, you look at it from a creativity standpoint. And if he was going for perfection and was in that box, I don't think you could even come up with concepts like this.
Well, I think they need to prune the flowers a little bit. They seem to be growing. Steve must have been sitting there for quite some time. That's all I can say. But we're going to talk to Michael Greco a little bit later on in the show. I'm very excited. So go to this, CatherineHall.net, and click the blog link.
Prioritize authenticity over perfection.
I agree. Now, what are we doing today?
We got a photo shoot.
We got a great photographer, but we're going to start.
I was going to spring the photo shoot on you, but I'm glad I didn't.
Thank goodness.
It might be a little
April
much.
Fool's is over.
So we're starting off. We're going to do Photoshop 6 is out. So Dave Cross is willing to come on and give us some tips.
Great.
And also, he came up with a game that he's going to mention as well. The Photoshop quiz game. So
Dave does a bunch of workshops on Photoshop, and the Dave Cross workshops are a great place to go. But we're gonna let's play a little game here.
Check out his app.
The Photoshop quiz game. This is a iPhone. Hi, Dave. Welcome.
Welcome. Good to be here.
Yeah. So tell us about this.
Well, it's just an idea I had. I've always tried to make learning fun ever since I've been teaching. And along the way, we have this podcast called Photoshop User TV, and somehow I got tasked with the idea of making up trivia questions.
Oh, what fun.
And just for fun, you know, to test your knowledge. So it occurred to me that might be a fun idea for an app. So it's a simple app, 600-plus questions on Photoshop CS5 in 3 different levels. Oops. And it's just a fun way to test your knowledge and try to make it a learning aspect too, because when you answer the question, not only do you get the correct answer, but you get a brief explanation as to why it's the correct answer. So you get to learn a little bit along the way.
So let me try a question here. Catherine, see.
Put me on the spot.
Let me see. Well, actually, this is the one question they show on here. Name this dialogue. You got to zoom in on that one to see.
Yeah, that's not a good example.
That's a good Photoshop question, though.
And there's three different levels, easy, medium, and hard, just so that people can try and pick the level that's appropriate. But just one quick story that I think is an interesting one. When we were testing the app, one of the people that was testing it was just testing functionality, and she'd never actually used Photoshop before, so she was just making sure the buttons worked and there was no spelling mistakes. But she played it so many times that one day at her office, two of the graphic designers were arguing about a keyboard shortcut, and she chimed in and said, "No, it's Command Option Shift N," because she'd played the game so many times that even though she didn't use Photoshop, she knew the keyboard shortcut. So hopefully that shows that you can learn a little something if you play it enough times.
How can I get on that payroll?
Yeah, really. That's funny. So there's an iPad and an iPhone version, so you can do it either way. And it's $1.99, very reasonable.
On sale right now for the next few days just to get us started, and then the price will go up a little bit, but hopefully. And we got lots of plans for more versions and more questions and all kinds of fun.
Oh, good. What a good way to learn.
All right, so what's in Photoshop 6?
Well, I got to tell you, when I got the message that said you want to come on and do 5 to 10 minutes about Photoshop CS6, that's kind of like history of the world in 3.5 minutes, because there's actually a lot of stuff in Photoshop CS6. And it's worth noting, this, of course, is the Photoshop CS6 beta. So it's a public beta. It's not actually shipping yet, but Adobe has made it available for people to try out, which means it is a beta software, so that there is a chance that things might not function properly, although it's pretty unlikely. But really what they're trying to do is get the public feedback to give input as to what they think about the new features and things like that. So there's a lot of big features and a lot of really important small ones. And I think if you look, you can find a lot of the big ones out there. So I thought I'd show some of the smaller but important ones that people might not see at first glance. So let's see if I share my screen here.
Now, the only thing I worry about when they do this is, I have 5.5 on my hard drive.
Am I
just going to be forced to upgrade, or am I going to be able to?
No, I mean, it looks for that version to make sure you're an official owner, but they can both coexist.
Okay.
So what a lot of people do is they use the beta version but still have their current version just in case something doesn't work, or if they have a plug-in that only works in their current version or something like that.
Good news. What's, by the way, this looks like this looks like Lightroom.
That's one of the first thing you notice is that they changed
totally
the
different user
interface to go with the darker user interface, which frankly has been around a lot of the other Adobe products like After Effects and Lightroom and things like that. However, one of the decisions they've made is they said, well, you know, not everyone might like this, so you do have the option of changing the preference to go back to if you prefer the kind of original way of working. So you can, they've kind of made this the default look, but you can always change it a little bit if you want. So that's the first kind of really noticeable thing, and that's a personal choice. Here's an example of one of those smaller things that no one's been talking about that I think is pretty powerful, and it's a filter that allows you to deal with lens issues like this. This is obviously taken with a fisheye lens, and previous versions of Photoshop have had the lens correction filter, but now there's one that takes it a step further called adaptive wide angle. So when you choose that, it's going to go into its interface, and it's seeing that there is a fisheye lens. It's sort of auto seeing that. You can see it does a slight correction. But what's really interesting is it has this constraint tool here where you basically just draw along and say, this here
that's a
actually
straight line.
Should be straight.
Oh, no.
And it adjusts.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Wow.
And you can tweak very easily. And then if you need to, you can, of course, scale it up and, you know, try and crop it to the point as a quick way of dealing with, that's the only photograph I have and it has some, you know, a bit of a wide angle look and I want to tweak the results. And you can continue to draw further constraints and things like that. So that's kind of an interesting one that's simple to see the difference. Now, one of the differences that a lot of people, I think, when they see a new thing in Photoshop, we are creatures of habit. So we tend, our first reaction is, oh, I like the old way. And here's probably the prime example. I think most people, when they see this at first, they're going to say, please tell me I can go back to the old way, and that's the crop tool. Crop tool has had a really significant overhaul. And I got to be honest and say, the first 5 minutes, I was like, what the? And then as I started playing with it more, I thought, this is actually really cool, because I've deliberately chosen an overly crooked photograph here. But now if I take the crop tool. What used to happen is if I rotated, what would happen is the crop would rotate, but not the photograph. Here you'll see the photograph is actually rotating
within
so
the crop.
So you can see what's happening. And as you crop in, it always keeps a center focus. So as I move to, say, I just want her face, it kind of moves everything in. And let's just escape out of there. You can see if I take the straighten option, it does the same kind of thing where I can drag along what I want to be straight. And right away, it rotates the image live. In the past, you used to have to click OK to see if you liked it or not. Here, you can see, well, if I crop this much, I'm going to lose a bit of image here and here that I can hopefully content aware fill or do something else. So this is a big difference. Also, lots of options for what kind of overlay do you want? Do you want a rule of thirds? Do you want a grid? So there's various options that you can kind of cycle through to decide which one you want.
I have to say, anybody who's used Lightroom will be very comfortable with this.
Right, exactly. And I think that's one of the things that they've done is try to make some similarities. And I hesitate to show this, but there is an option called use classic mode for those people that just can't handle the change.
Right.
So Adobe did try to make it so that you can see a few things. So here's a powerful function, and I have this belief in when I'm trying to show something really dramatic to show the after photograph first, because I feel if you show a before and then an after, your eyes kind of see where to look. So this is an after photograph that I've taken or I've done using one of the new tools, and this is the before. So the people were actually...
Wait a minute, you moved them over?
Yeah, but you check this out, because this is pretty crazy.
This
I'm going to make
content
a new layer.
Aware fill on steroids is what this
is. It is, and it's actually one of the new tools in here, which is called the Content Aware Move tool.
Oh, my God.
And what it does, I can just make a very rough selection. I mean very, just kind of going around and trying to get the people here. I'll just make sure I get that last little bit there. And two very important things. First of all, I made a blank layer, and now there's an option called sample all layers. Previously with Content Aware Fill, it wasn't possible to put the results onto a new layer. Now I can say, I wish when I'd taken this, these people were actually over here.
Right.
And it does two things. It moves them over, but it also looks at the background and analyzes and does a Content Aware Fill on the background to cover them up.
Unbelievable.
Onto a separate layer. So you still have options to do further work.
Dave,
so
how fast of a computer? I see it's a Mac.
Yep.
Is this a super fast, high-end Pro?
What not are you? At all. This is a one-year-old MacBook Pro laptop
it's
off the
MacBook.
Shelf. Nothing
a
usual.
Yet, so.
That, and that's.
Amazing.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Leo, because one of the other big differences that just under the hood, there's just a lot of speed improvements and things that we used to sit and wait for that progress bar. Now it's just it happens.
Well, if you think about the calculations that went on to make that move.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is not a huge file, but I've tried it on some bigger files, and still, frankly, when you compare to the alternative, how long it would have taken me to do the same thing by hand, it's pretty powerful. And so that's pretty cool. But the other one that I really like is another step of content aware. So here's an example of a problem that we would face where just by the nature of the beast here, we ended up with some not enough of the background and we need some more. Well, if I did just regular content aware fill, first of all, I'd have to do it on the background layer. And secondly, over here on the right where the tire is, the chances are it's going to pick up some of the motorcycle because that's the closest thing, because that's what content aware fill does is look at the surrounding areas. So one of the options here is, again, make a new layer. And then what I can do is use one of the, it's not really a new tool, but it's a new function, is the patch tool now has an option called content aware. And it has various options for how strict it is in terms of following. I usually just leave it on medium. And then there's an option again called sample all layers. So for example, here, let's say I want to try and cover up this part with some of this pattern. Well, if I just used the regular content aware fill, it would just randomly choose, and the chances of it matching are pretty slim. Now I can move it over, and now I can kind of adjust and move up and down and go, that looks good there to me. So I'm actually choosing the area that it's using for the pattern. So it can do a much better job now. And in cases like down here, where I would be running into problems in the past with running into the tire, again, I have the option of picking my own spot and having it kind of blend in. And keeping in mind, again, it's still on a new layer, so if I do need to make any adjustments, I still have that as a new layer, which I didn't have before.
Boy, that's pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, the Content Aware before in 5, I found I couldn't use it that much.
Well, and that's
it would grab the tire, like you said, or it just didn't seem very functional.
It was a little too automated. Yeah.
Well, now we've made it actually usable.
Right, and the difference was before, it basically was random. So it would look at surrounding areas, and if you didn't have much of a surrounding area, then that was the problem. This patch tool option solves that problem because now you choose where you want it to go. And I'll just show you one last thing just to give you an idea of the future of Photoshop. This is not the perfect photograph for it, but there's a whole new set of filters called the Blur Gallery. And when you go in there, take a look at what happens. Instead of opening a completely separate dialog box.
Ooh.
Isn't good.
Real-time rendering.
Well, what the really interesting thing is, what it does is it basically takes over the entire interface. You see what just happened there? Basically, the tools went away, but I've still got the full image, and I'm doing on-screen controls. So I can just drag around and decide what level of blur.
That's great.
But the key message, I think, is the fact that a lot of filters now are doing this. They're taking over the whole screen. Instead of popping up in a little dialog box, they're now part of just the interface, in effect. Oh, and one last one. I'll show you this because this is crazy.
Dave Cross, if you're just joining us, Dave Cross is giving us a demo of the new Photoshop 6. This is the beta version. It's free for download from Adobe.com. Go ahead.
So one last one, that because if you've ever used Liquify, I always used to tell people, don't open the whole image in Liquify. It'll be way too slow. Open just a little part. First of all, anyone who's ever used Liquify should have noticed there it opened in a flash because if fast, it would have been really slow. Now, not that you would really do this to a photograph, but just to show how fast this is, it's like real-time Liquify.
Oh, wow.
You would have moved your mouse and watched a lag while the brush eventually caught up with you. So
not since Kai's Power Goo have we had tools like this.
Exactly. Wow. So pretty sweet. And that's just an example of the many kind of real speed improvements. And there's a lot of that little stuff. And you may remember at CS5, Adobe talked about the JDI, which are the just do it features, where they fixed a whole bunch of little things. Photoshop CS6 has even more of those. There's a big, long list of, I want to say, something like 65 small but important changes, like a checkbox or the ability to change the blend mode of multiple layers and just things that you couldn't do before.
Mm. Has Adobe said when they'll release this?
They haven't, but they did publicly announce a couple of years ago that they're looking at a 2-year cycle between versions, and the last CS5 came out like April 2010.
Mm.
So if you look at Lightroom, the Lightroom beta was out for, 5-6 weeks before the shipping version. So if I had to guess, I would say that's probably a good guess. But, I mean, oops, nobody really knows, of course, except Adobe.
And who just sent a ninja to shoot you. So are you okay?
I just had a microphone.
I know.
So but that's good. That means get it now. Because who knows how long this free beta period will last. And if you want to play with this is a great opportunity. And it feels stable. I mean, it seems pretty stable, yes?
Well, it really is. And I think there's a big difference between a public beta that gets out like this
100%.
And a beta that people are testing. So anyone who has concerns over, is it going to be really stable? Well, I've been using it for quite some time and haven't very rarely seen any performance issues or anything that's caused me to have any concerns.
Well, that's also the case in betas. They're often slow because they still have development code in there. Remarkably fast, given that you're on a MacBook Pro.
Yep.
Really great. Dave, so nice to have this quick review on here. Thank you. People should go to Dave's website, dcross.com. You can find out more about all of the stuff, all of the classes, the workshops, everything Dave does. Get his game, the Photoshop quiz game. And a whole lot more. Dave Cross online, dcross.com. And I'm downloading it right now.
As we speak.
Yes.
That's what Leo does. He buys and he downloads.
Well, I don't have to buy. That's what I really like. And, you know, I'm a long time, as you are, Lightroom user. This feels very comfortable.
I think this will affect people, I mean, the users of Lightroom. I mean, if they get comfortable in this environment, they're going to be less likely to go to Aperture.
To be honest, I fight this every time there's a new Photoshop. I go, well, this time I don't need to upgrade. This time it's just I don't need content aware. Yes, I do. I don't need. And it's just amazing. And this one I think is going to be, even if people have put off the upgrade, this is going to be one of the
big ones. Like 5.5 was a.
Well, for Photoshop users, 5.5 really didn't do anything. It was the other products that made a difference.
Yeah, but
I think
six,
I think people will be surprised how much there really is in Photoshop CS6.
Very good.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah. Dave has a bunch of workshops if you want to know more. Of course, the podcast. Tell us where we can find the podcast, Dave.
Well, the Kelby TV is where all the podcasts live. I have one myself called Ask Dave, and then Photoshop User TV is every week. Well, they're on a break, slight break right now, but just about every week. We actually filmed episode number 300 the other day, so crazy.
You're a little bit ahead of us.
KelbyTV.com.
/Photoshop User TV if you want to
that's the one.
Watch. Hey, thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime.
Great to talk to you.
I appreciate it.
Is somebody actually holding your mic now?
No, that's just me because I'm the only one here, so I'm trying to hold it, look casual, like nothing's going wrong.
Nothing's happening.
Oh my God!
You did a great job.
He's gonna go.
Thank you, Dave.
Pleasure.
Dcross.com. That's great. Yeah. I'm excited. I really am excited. You're right. 5'5". But this
is a real. Yeah. There you go.
So I think we got a big show. I think we've got to introduce Michael and get started. And then I know we're going to do a little something in the other room.
Yes.
You're
going to
surprise me.
I
don't know what
it is.
So we'll go right up to that. I'll do the commercial, and then we'll go into the other room as we're moving, okay?
Oh.
All right?
Wow.
So let's get to Michael, because I don't want to waste a minute more. We've got a great photographer here with us.
You've probably recognized, I mean, he's shot everyone, celebrity-wise. But the thing that's amazing about him is his creativity. And his shots, he takes people that are very recognizable, that you're used to seeing in the
media. Well, you saw that great Steve Martin shot.
You just flip right by it. But his work is just so profound and so conceptually so amazing. And I don't know how you do it. I want to know how you come up with these concepts and how you have such creative work.
It sort of comes to me. You know, when I teach or lecture, I talk about having a 25-year yoga and meditation practice. And I think I've worked at sort of getting in touch with my intuition and just letting, like, grabbing that thought that you have, oh, that's a good idea, and not squashing it or not just, like, grabbing it and running with it.
You know, last time I was in Paris, I didn't even bring my camera because I thought, what am I going to do with the Eiffel Tower that 1,000 people haven't done? So you have kind of the same thing. What am I going to do with David Crosby that 1,000 people haven't done? How do I capture his spirit in a way that's new, unique, and different? And you say you just channel the creativity.
Yeah, I try to, like, it's that Ansel Adams, you know, to have a plan but be able to do a U-turn. Mm-hmm. So there's the idea of, you know what you're going to do, have it planned out, have the set built, have the clothes there, do whatever. But if something else better comes up, you're all over.
I love Vanna White with the big gulp. Is that Vanna White?
No, that's Chelsea Handler.
Yeah. Chelsea Handler. Oh, of course.
That's Chelsea Handler.
With the big gulp.
We watched that video.
It actually would have been better if it were Vanna White coming out.
Then that would be better.
That would have been something.
Who remembers Vanna White?
Nobody does. Nobody. Chelsea Handler, of course. Why am I? She kind of looks like Vanna White. That's
moments,
why.
Leo.
No, she looks like
Remember,
it.
You're not supposed to be perfect.
I know that's Robert Duvall, though. I can tell that.
That is Robert Duvall.
With a cross.
That was when he did The Apostle was the movie. Mm-hmm. That was shot for time.
Mm-hmm. So do you do a lot of these on commission from the motion picture?
A lot for the magazines, some in the advertising world. I mean, what helps me is that we're often trying to find a peg to the movie that someone's done, the story, an aspect of their life. So that's sort of what I play off of. That's
right.
Where
so you have some sort of at least.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it with the Steve Martin picture because you got it right away. He wrote his memoir, and the idea was he's been writing all his life his memoir. Exactly. That was
when
great.
The roses grew up around.
Yeah. Yes.
This is great because it doesn't look like a celebrity photo. It looks like, a Depression era photo from Grapes of Wrath. You know, kind of a thing. Of course, it is a celebrity.
But the other time, it's like screams Joaquin Phoenix. So it's pretty amazing.
I love this.
So how do you not squash them? So I think we all, as artists, get those, like, kind of crazy off the wall.
And we think,
and you sort of dismiss
terrible
them
idea,
or
not
bad
doing.
Idea.
Yeah.
How did you learn, how do you know what is actually, well, they're all crazy, but.
I think it takes time, and you work at incorporating, it's a package. The package is the lighting, the vision, and I try to incorporate the idea into the creation of it, the what it's going to look like, how it's lit, what the style is. So, you know, I had seen for the Will Ferrell picture, I had seen the trailer to
Blades of Steel, yeah.
Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory,
and
yes.
We're playing it now. I'd seen the trailer, and in the trailer, one of the other actors was on a white polar bear carpet. So I had this idea of doing the whole shoot as a white-on-white shoot. White seamless, white polar bear.
Now, you're lucky because when you're working with somebody like Will Ferrell, he's obviously game.
Yeah, not everyone is. Yeah. Comics are kind of interesting because they're comedy writers usually. He's right. A physical comedian mostly. Right. But a lot of comedians write their own comedy, so they're writers and they don't get the visual pun. So
Steve Martin's probably a good example of somebody who's very shy. Maybe, was he easy to work with?
Very professional. He gets the visual pun.
Yeah, he's a super pro.
Gets the visual
pun. These are great. I love these. And this is what you don't often see, is all the shots that led up to that.
Yeah. Well, we had a... There's three elements to the video. We had a time-lapse camera running, then we animated the stills that I shot, and then we took the hero shots that we retouched and moved around them.
Awesome. So. Just really, really great. And these are the final hero shots that you ended up using.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
The one on the left is my fave.
Yeah.
And it helps when someone just adds, like, that little subtle touch, you know? It's like...
You didn't say, put your finger to your chin.
No. He was amazing because he could work it, you know.
How do you work with somebody who doesn't get that visual image?
You help them, you know. And
what does that mean?
I love this.
Help them.
Oh, my God. This
you
is great.
Suggest. You...
Coax.
You... Here, I mean, this shoot was pretty interesting because they were on a press junket. And Ben was, like, exhausted. And he was standing there, like, dead in the camera. And Owen just started making him crack up. So... For me, I was like, you know what? What the hell?
Let him go.
Just go.
This looks like a behind-the-scenes after-the-shoot kind of a shot.
And it is, in a way, but I had no control. I just, like, didn't say a word.
But the relationship totally comes out in this. And that's, you know, that's what's going on. It's great.
I thanked Owen Wilson profusely.
Yeah. Owen, you saved the shot.
Yeah,
that's neat. Is that Justin Bieber?
Jesse McCartney.
Oh, okay. The hair fooled me. That's not Vanna White on the left.
No. That's a model.
Oh, look at this.
Yeah, this is great.
Steven Spielberg in a ditch.
Yeah, that's just part of the concrete surrounding at Universal. So
that's great.
So what was the concept with the image on the left? What was the story?
There's another little video. If people go to michaelgreco.com, spelt with two C's, there's a video that shows the behind the scenes of the Pedro Almodovar and...
Oh, is that who that is? That's Pedro?
Pedro Almodovar and Penelope Cruz. And the idea is that they were so tight, that they had such a tight relationship. Mm-hmm. So we used them being physically close together to illustrate that. And that's what the concept was. So
really, really something. Look at that.
Thank you.
Great shot. Stevie, reflected in the piano.
That was an amazing moment because we walked into the studio. We were setting up a backdrop to shoot a magazine cover, and he played.
Mm.
And I won't make the bad pun that he didn't see us there, but...
There must be some challenges working with a blind subject because he doesn't know what you're doing. He was really cool.
But he just played, and the whole crew just sat around.
Amazing,
just 45 minutes he played for.
So you come in. Did you even have this concept with this? Or
no.
Is this you walked in?
No, I walked in.
So you have a concept, you walked in, he's playing, everything changes.
Well, I thought I'd shoot him at the piano, but he's playing, and I wasn't about to stop him from playing. Like, I was not to say, hey, Stevie, please,
no,
stop.
No, don't play.
Yeah.
But did you drag the shutter? What did you do here?
Yeah, there's a hot light on the background. I sort of wanted to get the fact that he's moving and there's some motion in it. So there's a continuous light source on the background, and then a strobe on him. And I think there's another light source in the piano to get the piano. I have a lighting book. I wrote a lighting book called Lighting in the Dramatic Portrait, and I talk about a lot of the pictures, like I believe that one's in the book, and I talk about how we did it.
Let's mention that, because people can buy that as an ebook.
It just came out as an ebook. You can go to the iTunes store.
And I actually have check it out.
I love you for that.
I want to buy it now.
I mean, after I saw him speak in Vegas last year, I ran out and bought this book.
Is
right
everything
away.
In this in the ebook?
Yeah, well,
yes.
Now it's in the ebook, so I would.
It's we,
now
we
I
did,
have both, but I'm going to carry the ebook wherever.
This is
I go.
Actually a good medium. Now I got to tell the story of this. This is your 19-year-old son did this.
My 19-year-old son coded the book Dakota
That's
Greco.
Amazing. Yeah.
Just turned 20, actually. So
isn't that
he
neat?
Took a break. He's in the game design department at Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz.
Oh, great. Great program there. Yeah.
And he did that. He's working on another book for me, and we're thinking of starting a small press. So
I think it's a wonderful idea. Yeah.
He did a great job.
And what's nice about, of course, doing it on the iPad as opposed to, say, the Kindle, is you see the color, you see the very nice reproduction of
well,
the photos.
Well, it's available everywhere. Yeah. I, of course, love my iPad, and if you have a Kindle Fire, you would see it in color also.
Right.
But, you know, I think it works well. It's
just lighting it's and the dramatic portrait, if you want to pick it up in the iBook store. Or
lighting and the dramatic portrait.
And then
portrait.
What was, when you wrote this book, what was your mission?
The idea for me was that I had seen a lot of, like, it was twofold. I know that a lot of what I do is about creating light, creating shadow. I know how to light. So I wanted to set myself... I wanted to put something out there and set myself out as the expert in the field. And I have spoken at the Photo Plus Expo for 18 years doing what was this program, Lighting in the Dramatic Portrait. So I did it, and I, you know, wanted to be the expert. But I also, in looking at other books, realized that no one had done a lighting book that was where the images were personal, where the stories were off the cuff, where you talk about your mistakes, where the images had some style and some edge to them. You know, a lot of the beauty Hollywood books are like, you know, put a butterfly light here, and the images are very overproduced, and as I say it, when there are too many lights and it's too overproduced, I feel like I get a hairball in my throat.
Yeah.
It's
mm-hmm.
just like...
It's just like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. Authenticity sometimes means imperfection. This is a good example. A lot of times photographers want to eschew motion blur. Oh, I don't want any motion blur in my shot. But it gives it a drama in some cases that you would lose otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a cover shoot of Shaq, and I've just picked up a 35mm camera and ran some black and white film in between the setups.
This is film?
That is film.
Interesting. Do you still shoot a lot of film? Or
no.
It was just chance. You happen to have it.
This is a couple of years old. I mean, this book is sort of the greatest hits of my portrait career. So,
you're a Hasselblad shooter, and we'll see some more of that in a little bit. Yeah.
Well,
so
I'm,
all
I'm
medium format is all of this camera. Medium format.
A lot of it's medium format, but some of it's 4x5 in there. A lot of it's medium format.
There's some more motion blur. Yeah.
You've mentioned that one of your favorite things to teach is being creative and learning to see. And my question for you is, how does one learn to see?
By looking. You know, it's like it's. Well, I try to, especially if I'm teaching a class, and a lot of the workshops I do is about setting up a picture, right? You're setting up a light, you're maybe dressing someone, you're posing someone. So the idea is don't rush through it. The idea is don't look at that little LCD screen on the back of the camera. The idea really is to take your time. I try to tether into a laptop and look at the picture. If we're on a set, we'll bring a 30-inch Apple Cinema display and calibrate it. And we're really looking at, all right, is the light better here or here? Mm-hmm. And that makes a big difference. I'm always riding that edge. So I try to light something dramatically. I'll put the light up as high as I can go, but then I still need to see a little bit of the white in the eye. So it's like finding those right balances between being dramatic, you know, and getting everything to work means you have to actually look at the image.
You know, it's funny because it's almost the opposite of what I thought you were going to say, because when Catherine asked you, how do you see, you say, look, I thought maybe you were going to go into this kind of, oh, it's all about the gestalt of the feeling, and I'm just going to let... And you actually got technical. You actually... So it's interesting. There's a way for you to see and still be very technical in what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to know how to get there. But it's all aesthetic. I mean, I've had people say to me, okay, I love the way you use strobe and balance the sky. What f-stop do you use? It's like, I don't know. Shoot four exposures and I pick one.
I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a mix of both. It is both feeling, but it's also technical, and you just try it.
Well, the technical part is knowing how to get there.
Yes.
And the technical part is to knowing how to arrive there, but it's all your emotional, it's all my emotional reaction.
You have to stay in touch with that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sometimes when you get very technical, you start to lose that.
Well, yeah. And that's what I love about your book, is it's coupling both. There's that high concept, there's that intuition, but then there is a lot of technique.
This on my computer here, Tony, is a very emotional, beautiful shot. Yeah.
That's Lucy Liu.
Yeah, she's great. And the texture behind is...
That's a wall in a house. We rented a house as a location for that shoot.
But something's going on there. Is that another one where you have
she's got a piece of fabric. She's in a dress where there's a piece of fabric going over the railing, and then there's a light on the ceiling.
Okay. Interesting. Is that Johnny Cash?
It is Johnny
Cash. I am so jealous. Wow.
Not many people get that. One of my greatest moments in my life, he walks into the field and goes, "Hi, Michael. I'm Johnny Cash.
My name is Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash."
Wow. That is pretty amazing.
It's been the most challenging to shoot.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I can say it and still live in Hollywood.
Challenging isn't bad.
Yeah. I said challenging.
You know, all of those actors that you've read about or some actresses
you know. Matthew McConaughey, easy guy.
He was easy.
Yeah, you could tell. Easy. Just relaxed.
That's Lawrence Bender, the producer.
Oh, that's not Matthew McConaughey. Well, no wonder he's so relaxed. he had his shirt on. That's what fooled me. If I had seen his abs, that's beautiful, too.
Kelly Wu, the actress. Yeah.
I'm not going to identify these guys anymore because I'm apparently terrible at it.
Notice how I'm not saying. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
Roger Cross.
Oh, that's fun.
It's a model.
Talk about a butterfly light.
That was a Psychology Today cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So they give you an assignment. How detailed is the assignment?
It could be sketched out, or it could be a rough idea that I just run with. Or, you know, I remember doing a Fast Company cover that was like high concept, where it was this best-selling author wrote this piece, Now That the Bubble Has Burst, What Am I Going to Do With My Life? It was the gist of the piece, this guy, Poe Bronson.
Oh, yeah.
And I shot Poe for the cover, but we started getting into, like, all the possible concepts of how you illustrate that. And one of those pictures is on my site. You know, what shoes will I wear now? What hat will I wear now? What shoes will I fill? So, and that's how we came up with
hat and shoes.
Hat and shoes. Yeah, hat and shoes. What shoes will I fill? What hat will I wear? And we worked weeks with the creative director, with the editor having to approve it. So every situation
was
different.
Was that the one with all the shoes on the... Oh, it is amazing.
Is it in here?
Yeah, it's in there. It's such a brilliant photo.
I don't want to skip by the Scorsese eyebrows, though. Sometimes you have somebody who's such an icon.
Oh, I love those Scorsese
eyebrows. And has such an iconic look that you can just narrow it right down to the eyebrows.
You know, part of me is in developing someone's style, though, too, and part of me wanted to, like, get some tweezers and, like, pluck those things. And part of me was like, no.
They're out of control.
So one thing that I find interesting is that a lot of photographers, when they're first getting into photography, they want to be a photojournalist. That's kind of their thing, their path. And then they get into it, and they realize, maybe I don't want to do that. And you went down that road, and I see where you've gone. And it's so different than, you know, working for the Boston Herald where you started your career. How did you know this is not the right path for me? And how did you have the courage to change when you're already on the road to a successful career?
My heart wasn't in it. And I got into it not because I thought that would... Like, I just sort of fell into it. I was in school in Boston at the School of Communications getting a film degree. And I took a photojournalism class. And it was like, wow, this is exciting. I grew up in sort of a suburban New York. And, you know, I thought, this is fun. This, from an experiential standpoint, it would be fun.
Wouldn't it be?
And then I realized my heart wasn't there. So I kept thinking of, oh, wouldn't it be great if this happened? Or can someone just come out with a gun and I get that perfect shot?
Can you
shot,
just move,
you know,
this? Or change,
you know,
that?
And it's like, you know, or wouldn't it be great if they wore this or that? And I had all this crazy information in my head about, you know, about how exciting a picture should be, what should be happening. And I thought, all right, I have to be in the creative world. And then, of course, the where I knew it wouldn't work for me, one day I was covering an anti-Klan riot, and a very well-known photojournalist who I love this guy, P.F. Bentley, and one of the Turnley twins. I forget whether it was Peter or David because they're identical twins, and I always forget which one. So one of the Klansmen actually did drive by shooting a gun and in the air, but the two of them jumped up. And they like, where's the shot? Yeah. And I hit the ground, wet my pants.
You wanted to get out of there.
So I knew that. I was like, no, they're shooting.
But it's interesting because a photojournalist is about capturing what's happening at the perfect moment. You like to create. Although I have to say, I'm looking at this picture of the people diving off a cliff, and that's all about the perfect moment. That's a photojournalistic shot, absolutely.
Yeah, but this composition is set up. The
chance of them all standing like that is so.
You know,
we ruined it for you. Wait, so go back to that Sarkeesian one.
Martin Landau?
It's Martin Landau when he did Ed Wood.
Oh,
so
now this is like a classic Hollywood shot.
Yeah,
you must have been inspired a little bit by Steichen and all the classic Hollywood guys.
Well, I talk about that in Lighting and the Dramatic Portrait in the book because I shot some black and white, but it was lit for color. There's a light under this beautiful Baroque rail and a light on this dark maroon wall. And I had an assistant at the time who had a double stigmatism and was red-green colorblind. He had these big, thick glasses, and he stood in front of one of the strobe packs so that the slave didn't see. So we shot a whole bunch of film that half of the lights weren't going off on. So it was sort of serendipity. I would have never lit it that way. But
it's amazing.
The one light really works well.
Yeah.
So, and especially when he played Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood, it was sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, that's that character, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I have to say, part of it is there is this moment to it. Part of it is setting it up and capturing the emotion that someone like Mel Brooks or Scorsese or Martin Landau gives you, Lucy Liu gives you.
Right. What I love is, you come in and you're shooting an icon and you're not doing the iconic shot, but now your shot is the iconic shot. There will never be a Mel Brooks picture as good as that. That's it. You've created it. You've done it. It's done. Go home, everybody else.
It was very funny there. I actually tried to get him to be very dapper and be with a cane and tails, and he couldn't do it. He had to take off
the jacket.
He was like, do you want this? You want that? No, Mel, take it down a bit. A wink. I want the wink. He's like, ta-da.
He's climbing the walls, literally. These are great. I'm not going to say Deborah Harry because I know it's not.
Berlin, the band.
It's Berlin. There you go. Here's some nice motion blur. Are you in a car ahead of this?
It's car to car. A piece for Porsche.
Love it. How many times did you cover that stretch of road?
Not that many, but I shot a lot of frames.
That's perfect.
That's where you choose a DSLR over a medium format.
We're going to make you shoot with a DSLR. Yeah. Catherine's going to make you shoot with a DSLR. Is that okay?
It's okay. I'll be all right.
You can live?
I'll be all right.
I don't know how Hasselblad's going to feel about it.
I do use them on occasion.
He prefers Hasselblad. Let's just make this very clear. Michael Greco is our guest. Before we get up and go in the other room, we're going to do that. Do you want to do your tips?
He's going to do tips tips.
All right. So we're going to get up in just a moment. But first, I'm reaching over here to get...
First,
we got an ad for Ford Motor Company. You know, we had Steve Martin on one of our shows about a month ago. And I think he really thought we were doing this out of a basement. It was like Wayne's World. He was doing it out of kindness. And I said, and now it's time for a word from Ford. And he went, whoa. Whoa. Yeah, we have advertisers. Whoa.
We are legit.
Actually, Ford, we've talked before about the sink. I'm a big Mustang. Love my 2010 Mustang with a Ford sink and everything. I don't have, and I wish I did, the new AppLink. This is really cool. So Ford, as part of being a technology company, a high-end, 21st century automotive company, has done something that really is new to cars. They've got an API for apps on your phone to integrate with the car. I mean, that's unheard of. It's very Silicon Valley. It's very, very modern, and I love it. So you've probably seen some of the first AppLink apps for Ford Sync. We've talked before about Pandora, Stitcher, OpenBeak, Slacker Radio. So the idea with Pandora, for instance, is you know how Sync works. You keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. That's important for safety. And all the studies
say again and again, as long as you're doing that, you have a lot of cognitive excess, but you got to keep your hands on the wheel and the eyes on the road. You can't be doing this. So Ford said, well, all right, people want to be connected. We'll do it all with voice. So you keep your hands on the wheel. You press the button, boom, and you can talk to the car. You can say, play a song, set the temperature, you know, navigate to, all of that stuff. And I do this all the time. I love this. But now with the App Link, you can actually talk to apps on your smartphone. Pandora is a good example. You could say, hey, I want to hear my David Bowie station. Play it. Next song, thumbs up, thumbs down. Bookmark this song. All of that stuff, functionality built into the sync and speaking to it. And now we're getting some new apps. iHeartRadio has just come out, which is fantastic. They have a thumb play service that you can use using simple voice commands. Find your saved stations, skip to the next song, give a song a thumbs up. They've got an NPR app now. So this, radio stations are going to hate this. You can now get the latest breaking news, play your favorite NPR stations by voice, by request. You've got to, the best way to do this is to go to a Ford dealer and take a look at the Sync App Link in the vehicles that they've got now. They do have a mobile application developer network. So developers, if you're listening, you can work with Ford about your app ideas so that Ford can support you in getting them into the car. And that's why you're getting so many new apps. It's just exciting as heck. Learn more about Sync and App Link and other technologies by going to Ford.com/technology. That's the page you're seeing right now. Or, I always say this, the best thing to do, go to a Ford dealer and drive one. I mean, come on. Why not? Thank you, Ford, for your support.
What happens when you go buy one, or try to drive one? You want to buy it, don't you?
I end up buying it. Yes, I did. All right, now, what are we going to do? We're going to get up?
We are getting up.
We have the technology, we think.
And we are not going to have to rush through this one.
No, I gave you 20 minutes. Is that enough time?
Excellent.
All right. So you lead, because I don't even know where we're going. You did not telegraph this.
Yeah, no.
This is my April Fool's surprise. Michael Greco is our guest, and we are going to go take a walk.
And then before we go back, people can get your ebook in your store, michaelgreco.com.
He's smart. He sat back down.
You
got a great shot.
You're looking.
All right.
If you're going to talk to him.
I saw the camera angle there. Yeah,
see? Situational awareness.
He's on it more than I am here.
MichaelGreco.com, that's GRECO.com/store, and there's a button for all three. We have a Nook, iPad, and Kindle version.
Yeah, I showed that store page earlier, so we're good.
I'm very selective with what I buy.
Yeah.
And look,
I think you bought the book, which is great.
Well, no, I bought it before the ebook came
out. I think I'd like to have
The ebook's great because you can carry it around.
Yeah,
so
but this is pretty.
The idea of the ebook is that you could bring it on a shoot with you.
Yeah, but so. Look, come on.
If you're sitting at home with the... I don't know, but you can lay in bed and be sideways and look at the ebook.
Part of the idea of that was to split the between a how-to and a coffee table.
Yeah, it is.
So that there's just pure pages of display of photography, and then it gets into how I did something.
But here's the classic rules of lighting. You start with the basics, and then you break them all.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's go break some rules.
Okay.
Come on, kids.
All right,
here we go.
Did you recognize Stanford there?
I did.
He's scared to say at this rate.
Oh, I just pulled a plug on something. All right, can you still hear me?
Oh, no, you have a heavy mic.
Where is the camera? Where are we going?
We're back there.
We're back past the cafeteria.
Go ahead.
We're going to...
Follow the man after you, Michael.
Watch out. Oh. Thanks.
You got it?
Let's follow the lovely, handsome
there we go.
Cameraman.
So this is a part of the studio that we've never gone to see before.
Yeah, we've never been back here on TwitPhoto.
No, this is people are getting a tour here.
One of the favorite rooms of the house,
Here's the kitchen. Notice the giant disco ball, very important for events that take place here in the kitchen. But we've set Michael up with his lights and your camera, which is tethered to a Lightroom in the back here. And what are we going to do, Michael?
I'm going to go through just a few basic things that I do, and my list is being stepped on by the cameraman.
Here, I'll get it.
Good.
We like a little graphics on our paperwork.
I'm going to go through just like a couple of easy tips for people watching, and some of them are in my ebook, some aren't, but they're like basic, simple stuff that. You know, will help you when you're shooting.
It's too bad we don't have a beautiful woman here who could pose as a model
Would you do this?
Oh, I could do that.
Go on.
We could do man, we could woman. Yeah.
The shutter's not clicking, so.
Oh.
She has to fix her camera. See if it were a Hasselblad.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that.
So what made you choose this location? That's what I want to know.
There's just a clean wall here. We're just going for simplicity. It's all going to be about the lighting and some of my tips, and it's not going to be about the wall. I just wanted something that you can see.
Right.
So
here we go.
Excellent.
It's nice that we have a tethered touch.
And this is what you were talking about, although you'll sometimes set up a 30-inch monitor so that everybody can see in great detail. You don't need a loop with a 30-inch monitor.
I will. I mean, I like being tethered either into the laptop or, if we're in the water on the beach and you can't do it and you shoot a card, absolutely. But if you can, it gives you the precision to figure out what you're doing, and we'll keep working the shot that way. So
go ahead.
The first thing I want to... I want to discuss is we're talking about lighting. When you're lighting, you usually need to fill your light source. So I'm going to...
Let's go into the light.
Okay. So
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, and we can describe what's going on. Go ahead. Brian is our camera operator. He's going to go on in there. I'm going to stay back here and watch.
So I always fill my main light. Except in the Martin Landau situation when it didn't go off. But
if you'd like me to step in front of anything, I'll be glad to.
Very good.
I'll be your colorblind assistant for today.
I always fill, and the fill is usually very, very low in exposure. It's 3, sometimes 4 stops down. But the reason I do it is because in digital photography, you always want to make sure every pixel is firing. So the fill is always right behind camera, so it actually fills in everything.
You say actually get closer with the lights than you think. Closer than
No, that we're not up to that yet.
Not up to that yet,
but we will. We're not up to that yet. So
this fill is farther back.
And I use as big a fill as possible so that it's as soft. The idea for
a big soft box around.
Yeah, sometimes we get bigger. We can use 20 or 12-foot silks with strobes through them. And the idea is that the fill light doesn't make a competing shadow, or doesn't change the psychology I'm developing with the main light.
So it's basically your base light. It's your base...
Or it's just making sure that in all the shadows there are pixels firing.
Yeah.
That's all. That the
detail.
That there's some detail in there. You can have some areas that, when you look at in Lightroom, don't fire at all, but they should be as minimal as possible. Keeps the noise down, keeps the file looking good. It keeps that sort of stuff. So a big soft fill from camera, that's the first thing. And then the second thing for me is most people usually set up their light like this far away and pull it back. And what that does is then this light, let's say this was our main light, lights everything. It lights everything evenly. It's very flat. It's very it's very low at contrast. I like to do, and I want to challenge people to do it. Are you going to be my subject here? I'm going to challenge people to do it, is to push the light in much closer than they would ever think. Because what happens with a simple softbox like this...
You're not talking about the fill here. You're talking about...
I'm talking about the key light.
Okay.
Yeah. Because remember, and I haven't even measured these yet, but this fill, if we're remembering, is about 3 or 4 stops down in theory. So by moving the light in, I'm able to create a focus, and the light falls off. So there's different exposure values here. Maybe this is 3 stops lower than her face. I'm able to create drama by increasing the contrast. It has to do with the inverse law of light with distance, right? Every time you double it, the light goes down by a quarter.
Right.
So the same thing, every time you move it in, the light doesn't double, it quadruples. So by using that idea, I'm able to create extreme distances. So the distance from here to here to here to here becomes more extreme.
So you get several more stops drop off as it goes down.
Correct. And if I backed it way out, everything's lit relatively evenly.
Right.
So let's see.
Which is why you kept the fill light in the back. You wanted an even fill light. But now with the key, you want some drama.
Correct. Yeah. All right. I have an even shot,
a
test, or a meter.
Are we using your Mark III now?
We could here. Be.
No, this is the Mark II still.
Yeah. All right. The Mark III is here.
We have a Mark III body. We haven't done anything with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's very
I'm going to turn this.
You're taking that to Norway, though, for Nordic
Life. Yeah. Are you coming?
I don't think so. But I'll be there via Skype.
Okay.
I'll be there via Skype.
What
lens are we shooting here and why?
Just 24 to 70. It's a good all-purpose lens. Basically. I'm going to move into about 70 and I'm going to put it on autofocus.
And your aperture priority?
We need something to sync the strobe. Do we have a pocket wizard or?
We didn't even think of that.
We have the air remote that I use ProPhoto heads. That's it. We don't have a pocket wizard.
Okay, I'm going to shoot natural light under the tungsten lights
now
here.
Now we need the. Now the we'll 5D go back Mark up to.
3. The 5D has its built-in pocket.
We could grab the 5D Mark III.
But then you need something to receive. It has a built-in transmitter.
Does this have a built-in receiver or no?
It does have a built-in pocket wizard receiver.
Go ahead and keep going, and while Ryan goes and sees if he can find the.
Well, the Mark III will have a lot less noise, if nothing else. We'll crank this puppy up.
Okay, we've just gone to 3,200.
There you go.
Nice. And I'll set this to tungsten.
So just for people who don't, you just lost the strobe because we don't have a trigger for it. So that was going to be your big bright light.
We would have done this by strobe. We would have had when we.
So it's a little darker. We're going to turn up the ISO.
Exactly. Yeah. When I said test it, I didn't say test it with the strobe.
Do you ever shoot with modeling light anyway?
I shoot with them on the purpose in a professional strobe of having the modeling light is to be able to see what the lights are doing.
Right.
That's helpful. So,
and you don't want a big bright light the whole time because the model.
Yeah, they're going to squint. So if these were hot lights and hot enough to do that
Mark
with.
III?
So you light with some darker lights that are your modeling lights.
It needs Lightroom 4 to.
Don't sweat it. Don't sweat
it. In natural light.
We're going to do it in tungsten light.
A big burst of light every time he shoots.
Oh, that's not bad. There we go. All right, let's see if it comes in.
We'll accept the fact we're going to get some grain here. Normally you would. That looks good. Now, Brian, I want you to get the tethered shot as well, unless we have a way to pick that up.
I think you have.
Do we? Oh, good.
Yes.
We're getting fancy here.
So
we are fancy, Leo.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the idea, and this is the way to demonstrate this. I'm going to push this in very close, and you'll notice that I also am using very tiny soft boxes, which are
extra small.
Extra small soft boxes because it gives you that dramatic pool of light. I'll also, one of my other tips is to, I use these grids where I spot the light off and make a little spotlight of light.
Spilling out beyond where you want it.
Correct. So we're going to get right in underneath the light source here and we're going to make sure our autofocus
so you
is working.
Made an adjustment. What was the adjustment aimed at?
Looked a little too bright.
It's a little over bright.
Right. Yeah.
So we're going to dim it down a little bit. And there it is. It's certainly a lot darker.
But you'll see here that our hot spot's here, and the light's nicely falling off. You'd notice it more if she wasn't wearing a white blouse.
Yep.
But the light is just gradually falling off.
So this is one of the secrets of dramatic lighting. We want to tell the viewer what to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're focusing the light where you want them to see.
Right. So the eye immediately goes to the brightest part of the picture.
Yeah, and in a way it's...
It wanders around.
Yeah, and then you choose what to light in the shot. In a way, it's adding to the storytelling ability because you're directing them into different areas of the image.
Right.
So
you can actually see the sequence of their eyes going for the brightest spot. Is it the next brightest spot, or is it the next spot of interest?
I use my intuition to just balance, from a fine art standpoint, make sure there's balance in the photograph. But you're absolutely right. And if I think about it, it comes from my old photojournalist days where you would Dodge and Burn.
Well, and I wonder, we've talked to photographers who studied the classic painters, and they did very much the same thing with the way they would light these Renaissance paintings. And you can learn much of the same kind of thing by the painters who were painting, in effect, brights and dark and modeling.
So I like creating pools of light.
It's painterly. Yeah.
You'll also notice that the softboxes, when I use them, are in a vertical position. That's very flattering for the face because it's lighting from underneath and above at the same time to a certain extent.
You don't want a bar across the face.
No, because it's not as pretty looking. I rather stack two softboxes on top of each other or always keep them in a vertical position like that. That looks better. Ryan, can we get the 20-degree grid for the for my extra small softbox, please?
How is it?
All right.
Lit perfectly.
It feels amazing.
Dramatically.
This is another good trick. I'll use a small strip, and this goes back to what I was just saying about having light from under the face and above the face. So this is a nice way of lighting.
So you'll use it in portrait mode.
Correct.
To get all of that, to light, especially under the chin.
Correct. Yeah. But then a really dramatic way, now we're going to use a grid. No, give me the grid for the extra
small. 20-degree grid is in this small.
It's already in the box, yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. Excellent. You're so good.
So, I don't know, you probably can't see this, but it's just a grid, and it turns a flood into a spot, essentially.
Yeah, it's making that a relatively tight light. So now I also know I can tilt it up a little bit off her face and make it more directional and make this area fall darker. So we're going to do that. And if we were taking our time and had all the gear here, we'd put a little flag here just so her forehead
is not spot. Correct. Doesn't pop out there.
My idea is that I try to get it as close in camera as possible so that it has as natural a look, and then we'll fix whatever we need to in post.
We
then
no
we'll
longer
use,
dodge and burn as if we don't have to.
If it takes an assistant, you know, 12 seconds to take a flag and two minutes to take a flag,
right,
why would I do that for 20
minutes? And that way you see what
minutes?
You're getting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you have great control over the shot that way. Right here. Okay.
So what made you choose the 24 to 70? I don't know if I heard that.
I tend to use this lens
like
a lot.
Do you want me to volunteer my hand as a flag?
Sure.
I could be
sure,
the flag boy here.
Oh, Leo's my flag boy.
I'll be your flag boy.
Oh,
so
flag
just tell
boy.
Tell me where we want to... I don't want to get in the shot.
All right, so make your hand go this way.
Okay.
And then there you go.
You're going to get tired, Leo.
No, not for you.
Watch the microphone there.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Excellent. Okay.
I'm waiting for the flash to fire.
This is why everyone has an assistant. So, but different people work different ways. Some people, we've talked to photographers who don't like the strobes because it might be off-putting to the subject. But you like to have that having a lot more light makes a big difference for you.
Well, and I think big, bright, like if you're shooting...
You don't want giant lights on the people either.
Well, if you had to do this with, you know, I'm at ASA 2000 or 3200 right now, so... So if you had to do this, you'd have to use HMI or hot lights, and that's more off-putting to me.
It is.
Because they're huge, isn't
so,
they?
Yeah, it is.
Hot.
They're huge, and they're bright. And they're, so we're using a grid to shape the light. You guys can see that there. We talked about filling from behind and moving the light, moving your key in so that it naturally creates contrast and... You know, definition.
Is it typical to use just two lights? Would you ever use a third light from behind, a hair light or anything?
I'm not big on, like, a lot of hair lights. But usually there's a couple of lights because you're, you know, in, let's say, the Scorsese in that vertical picture. The fill is the sky. Mm-hmm. So I'm dialing the shutter speed up and down to change the fill.
Control the sky.
Correct, because I'm using strobe. That's another advantage of the strobe.
Right.
And
it overpowers the sky.
Correct. And then there's a medium strip, one size bigger than this. There's a medium strip, and I like to wrap, instead of lighting my subjects from the front, I wrapped that light almost behind him and had him turn that way. And then his coat was so dark that we've put a little grid spot on the black the coat.
So you use them as needed, essentially.
As needed. It's back to that looking.
You talk about the three-point classic, three-point lighting, but that's just a starting point.
Oh, I don't think that that diagram talked about the three-point classic.
No. No. I didn't look at it closely enough.
No, I mean, that's sort of like the, you know, that's the wedding and portrait school And I don't subscribe to it. I think it looks very formulaic and overproduced.
So you use the light as needed, where to do to tell a story. You need
Correct.
To tell.
Yeah. And every situation is different. If you have a, you know, the proverbial polar bear in a snowstorm, you want a little light somewhere, you're probably just going to need a little grid spot because you don't need to light the whole set.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so the subject matter really determines how I'm lighting something.
Michael, this has been fun.
Thank you.
It's really, really great. Michael Greco with 2Cs.com. And if you go to /store, you can get the new book on your ebook. That's
lighting,
fantastic.
Lighting in the Dramatic Portrait.
We just did it.
Yeah.
Very dramatic, huh? I love it. And thank you for playing along in the home version of our studio. We appreciate it. Thank you, Michael. Really nice to meet
you.
Thank you. Really a great photographer.
So
much fun. We thank you for joining us. We do Twit Photo, as you know, I hope, live. And we love it if you tune in live because we can watch the chat room and respond and see what you're thinking about what we're doing. We can even take requests. I can't do it right now because I can't see the chat room. But we do it live 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time every Tuesday on twit.tv. That's 2030 UTC if you're watching outside the United States. But you can always get the shows. In fact, if you've missed any shows, they're all available for download, audio and video. Do get the high-quality video. In fact, soon, high-def video. We've really got to get a high-def version.
Especially with the Twit Photo.
This stuff is so good.
And actually, I want to start. People have so many good recommendations. They're coming from so many different channels. I want to source, whether it's Quora or Porn Spring or like some sort of place where people can go and there can be discussions and suggest guests.
Well, we'll figure that out.
But if anyone has suggestions for a spot where we can keep it organized,
we can make suggestions coming. We have our own forums. We can put them there, but we'll figure that out. We'll let you know next episode. Yeah. Who is next?
Next, we have Frank Mio, the photo agent from New York.
So if you want an agent... We'll help you get an agent.
We're going to talk about his book that was just exhibited in the Seven Gallery in New York. And then we're also going to be discussing the relationship between photographer and agent. And
excellent.
It should be really important.
Excellent.
So I'm excited.
Well, this has been
a
lot of fun. Thank you, Catherine Hall.
CatherineHall.net.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank God we have somebody attractive that we can use for a model, right? And we thank you for joining us. Come back next week for another Twit Photo. Take care.